Chené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Hour number two, Chené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the show. Penn's Oil Performance Line. Our thanks to Chené's coach, Derek Fisher, joining us earlier in the show. Mike Golic Jr., two-time WNBA All-Star and current LA Sparks team member, Chené Agwumike, with us here. And Chené, listen, in the first hour, we had to get some things off our chest, right? You and Jay Will, you guys cool now? Have you guys talked yet since then?
We haven't talked yet, but I feel like there's always love. You know, there's always love between us. We're all like right. Siblings. We fight.
And you
it's
and
all
then
good.
And then we make up. We talk it out. That's what we're all here to do. We're here to have those locker room conversations and talk it all out. Now, we know the name of the show is Chené and Golic Jr. I've explained to you guys that I wanted to call the show One and Done in honor of our former number one overall pick and myself currently being done with sports. And instead, what we've decided is that this is a good chance, as we've got so much going on in the world of sports. Obviously, we got an NBA quadruple header going on right now. The Raptors pulled it off earlier right now. Utah's in action against Denver at this point. We got plenty of other action coming up tonight with the Celtics and great NBA teams in action. We're recoiling off the Giannis and the Bucks losing game one, the Lakers losing game one last night. But there's other things we got to get to and other things we got to get off our chest. And so we want to give ourselves a chance to go one and done here.
So much to say.
Are you good? Like, do you need a minute to breathe? Do you need some water?
So little time.
I'm trying to balance a lot right now.
One and done.
And I'll kick it off for us today, Chené. And I want to talk about something that we see a lot in the world of sports. Now, yesterday, our very own ESPN NFL insider tweeted, Adam Scheffner tweeted that Cowboys were releasing their injured defensive tackle, Gerald McCoy. He suffered a quad injury in training camp and had an injury waiver in his contract that if he hurt that quad, they can cut him, and they did. Now, the point in this is not to inspire a great deal of pity, because there won't be for many people for Gerald McCoy, who gets to keep his $3 million signing bonus that was a part of the three-year $18 million deal that he signed with the Cowboys. No, this is a reminder that no one wants pity, but athletes would like some understanding, because what we often see in these situations on the other end, when a player decides to hold out, when a player decides they want to go back to the table on their deal with a couple years left, it's met with cries of, don't be greedy. It's met with cries of, honor your contract. When we see in situations like this, it's never the same the other way. And so it's some understanding for players like Gerald McCoy, who go into this understanding, the only thing that I have at my disposal, at my leverage, is my body. It is my tool. It is how I feed my family. And it's ultimately the thing I've got to take the best care of by, at times, holding out, not showing up to camp, and preserving the one thing that makes them money in that situation. And so we understand this is how the business goes. Gerald McCoy understands that better than anyone. But not everybody is going to be able to have that positive response like Gerald McCoy, because every player knows that they've got to look out for their body, because eventually, at times when it fails like this, it could be the last time and the last opportunity you have to secure that future for yourself, your family, and ever get back on the field. So no one is asking anyone to pity players, especially not in the middle of what we're seeing right now in a global pandemic. We're just asking people, again, as we see time and time again, to understand that this is how these guys eat, this is what they're going through, and at times this is the only chance people have to change their family's lives forever. That's all I got for you, Chené. That's all I got.
The body is the business. That's a word.
That is
let that marinate for a second.
Snaps on that one. That's poetry.
Yeah, snaps. Can we get like snap sounds? Everyone snap across the nation. We're snapping.
We might have to get that one there. All right, Chené, one and done. You are up. What do you got for us today?
The Toronto Raptors. The Toronto Raptors are a peak franchise. Two wins already this year in the playoffs. Fresh off the heels of a championship. One of the best true teams in all of sports. But leadership starts at the top. And one of the most respected leaders in sports is Masai Ujiri, the president of basketball operations of the Raptors. Now, his leadership took the franchise, a franchise that had never won an NBA championship, to the pinnacle last year. Speaking of which, when the Raptors were seconds away from that signature title win at Golden State on the road, no one deserved to celebrate on the court more than Masai Ujiri with his players. Now, anyone who has been to an NBA game, and especially an NBA Finals game, knows that security is tight. Instead of headlines of celebration, we also saw headlines in which Alan Strickland, the San Francisco Bay Area Sheriff's deputy, filed a suit in February of 2019, alleging that Mr. Ujiri assaulted one of their deputies in the immediate moments after Toronto's victory. the deputy claimed serious pain and suffering. This was an attempt to really smear Masai's reputation, given the quote-unquote altercation. But by the way, after the investigation, the Alameda County's DA's office chose not to press any charges. Well, why? Now, yesterday, we got to see all the evidence. Masai Ujiri's legal team in his countersuit released the footage of the body cam from the incident to prove, quote, that Ujiri was not an aggressor, but instead the recipient of two very violent, very unwarranted actions. That was from the Raptors statement. Now, what does this teach us? Thanks to technology, we now have receipts. Body cams and technology allow us to provide real accountability, not only in sports, but also in real life. Masai Ujiri is one of four black team presidents in the NBA. He is on the front lines in the NBA of fighting racism and injustice. Yet a year ago, in his biggest moment, he was the victim of such. What happened to him was disrespectful, and I've never seen that happen to such a distinguished personnel in the NBA. Yet I have seen it happen too often elsewhere. Not all people have similar support, resources, and receipts to bring that truth to light. Masai deserved better, and so do many others.
Janae Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio. And Janae, truer words never spoken in this. And I think the point you brought up there is Masai Ujiri is distinguished because of his role with the team, what he's accomplished at that level. But the refrain that we've often heard in the public from black athletes, from your peers in the WNBA and the NBA in certain situations is all of that status and wealth doesn't absolve you at the sometimes from the racism that we see around the rest of society. And this was one of those clear instances where that status, even in the place that is his place of business, didn't seem to help or do enough to overcome some of the same slights that we see elsewhere.
Look, we don't know exactly what happened and why that reaction was, you know, solicited. But in my opinion, when you think about these instances, it's like you have one man that has done so much. And in his biggest moment, it was sort of mired in controversy. And I remember seeing that when the Warriors went down, the Raptors won. And then the next day, this was another story and this was not fair. But, you know, in society, I think overall, there are so many preconceived notions based on what we look like. And I'm not saying that this is exactly, we can't get in the brain or the mind of what happened there with the deputy. But in reality, like these type of things happen every day, not just in the arena or walking around like a field. This happens walking down a street. And Masai has done an excellent job of waiting for his moment. He went through all the right recourses. He got his legal team together. He made sure to file, you know, obviously a countersuit. And he had all of those resources largely because he was in position based on what he earned, you know, as a president. He's considered one of the, if not the best, most attractive mind in basketball, so much so anytime a job opening happens, it's like, use Masai, hopefully to change the trajectory of your franchise. And the fact that in that big moment, you can only look back and just sort of have a sour taste in your mouth, that stinks. But that's what we're all fighting against, you know, opening our eyes to one another and making sure we see each other for what we are and not just for what we assume that person to be.
Yeah, and I think it's always worth bringing this up, and Bomani Jones talks about this a lot, but benefit of the doubt is something that is often not levied to black voices in situations like this. It's something that you need, sadly, the receipts like this after the fact for it to be believed in any sort of tangible way, and I think that becomes part of the issue. I mean, what we've seen in this, the fact that they, in theory, had this body cam footage, whoever this person's superior was, and they still were going to pursue action, fully knowing what they saw on there, indicates some flaws that might exist in the system that continue to need to be addressed, even in situations like this. And so, a lot to certainly unpack there with Masai Ujiri. And as you mentioned, could not have handled it with more grace on his end, more class, and that's what we expect from someone in his position, a position of power like that. And coming up next, let's stick with systems and positions of power, because we've obviously seen allegations against former Washington football team running back Darius Geis, lending yet another unfortunate and haunting reminder that the flawed systems on college campuses that are in charge of protecting the students and athletes in a lot of these cases may be failing yet again. That's coming up next at Janae and Golub Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golub Jr., the podcast.
Janae and Golub Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Sirius XM Channel 80. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. We'll talk to Marcus Spears in about 10 minutes here. Our ESPN NFL analyst is going to be part of the new NFL Live crew rolling out August 24th, next Monday. Him, Dan Orlovsky, Laura Rutledge, Mina Kimes. Going to be a great crew there and a great conversation with Marcus. Absolutely. But, Chinea, we just had a tough conversation about what we saw Masai Ujiri go through after his experience on court and one of the best moments of his life that was ultimately, you know, proven his side of the story for some body cam footage that came from the security guard in question in that incident. We now have to deal with another tough incident right now, as according to an article written by Nancy Armour of USA Today, in part, who will join us later in the show here, two former LSU students say that they were raped by former Washington football team running back Darius Geis back in 2016. They told USA Today that that Geis assaulted them in their own apartments following nights of heavy drinking. Now, in this situation here, they said they shared the allegations with multiple people, including at least two coaches. And now this all comes to light in part because the Washington football team released Darius Geis on August 7th, 2 hours after he was arrested for three separate domestic violence charges in Virginia. So Darius Geis, no longer a member of the Washington football team, but now this article dropping. And Chinea, this seems to be another incident where you hear these women saying that they told multiple people on campus, not law enforcement, but like we know, part of the hierarchy on campus, telling coaches and making them aware of the situation. And they're alleging they told at least two and that nothing was done about it. And seeing this, it only conjures up, I think, thoughts that we've seen, unfortunately, time and time again, about how, especially for people who are victims of domestic violence, sexual assault on college campuses, the system often failing them.
Yeah, the system does fail. But at the same time, it's also sad that the only way we get the voices heard is by going to the public. Like, there should be a system where there's trust. And this day and age, issues like this have been, you know, long hidden, but are now, as you mentioned, coming into light. And we have seen this happen in real time with now the Washington football team. Again, it all starts with leadership here. And I think, you know, starting from this day on, leadership starts at the top. And you have to commend Coach Ron Rivera, because in his first year as a coach, he has a huge challenge ahead of him, both on and off the field. In order to have success, you have to literally lay the foundation and set the culture, both in the locker room and also in the front office. And we have heard, you know, from voices, you know, women in the workplace, we finally heard about how problematic the name was. And now we're seeing action, right? Action that Coach Rivera took swiftly after hearing such allegations, a coach that wants to win, but more importantly, he knows he cannot win without setting the culture first. Now, I guess finally, Dan Snyder, he's now put two people in place, Coach, you know, Rivera and President Jason Wright. Those people are in charge and they can provide leadership for the future for a franchise that has been struggling. And this does feel like swift progress. But again, like, this has been something that clearly has been bubbling below the surface, and the fact that it couldn't be addressed based, you know, on universities, or it's now gotten to the point where it's in the pros in front of Coach Rivera. And at least you have the right leader in place to make a decision based off of what the investigation or what the information he had received.
Chinea Ngolick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golick Jr., Chinea Igwumike with you. And yeah, I think there are a couple of layers to this. Certainly on the professional level, the separate instances and accusations of domestic violence that Darius Geis was implicated in, ultimately indicating his departure from the Washington football team. But remember, he was a very talented back coming out of LSU that was knocked down in the draft because of concerns about his maturity. Obviously, that does not necessarily link automatically to this. But now that you see this come out and the questions about the people back on LSU's campus in leadership position here. And LSU, the school put a statement out to ESPN and said, LSU and LSU athletics take all accusations of sexual assault with the utmost seriousness. Formal complaints are promptly and fully investigated, and the rights and privacy of students are protected as stipulated by the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. Complaints are also strongly encouraged to report to the offense to law enforcement. Complainants are strongly encouraged to report to the offense to law enforcement and are provided information on health care, counseling, and supportive measures available in this. But in those situations, ultimately, and the problem with this, and this is relevant in a lot of ways structurally to what we've seen now and the questions that we've had about the response to the pandemic that we're going through is, can you trust the people that are incentivized by the other portions of athletic competition on campus to, at the time, go against something that might hurt the product on the field? In this case, a star player like Darius Geis, if the accusations were true in this situation, what actually reporting this and running this up the chain of command in the right way to make sure that the victims are protected in these situations? Can you trust the people who are incentivized to make sure these programs run well or operated at a high level and succeed on the field to make decisions that might run counter to that interest? I think what all of this has shined a light on, and this is unfortunately one in a long line of examples that we've seen of instances of sexual assault, of allegations of rape on college campuses, where we hear reports of the system of reporting to the figures on campus that are supposed to be in charge of protecting these young lives, whether it's the coaches that in this case, the victims alleged they told and nothing was done about, in some cases flat out weren't believed by. That's another indication that we have to continue to look at this, and the cries, unfortunately, I don't know how much louder they can get, to put this in the hands of people who will go about this the right way, to take this out of the hands of people involved in the system and find a way. Unfortunately, I'm not an expert enough on this. Sarah Spain, who does such great work for us here on Spain and Fitz, is someone who speaks often about the subject of domestic violence, sexual assault, and what experts say can help in these situations. But it feels like, at the very least, creating a better system and a better landing spot for people that are going through this to come to a place where they feel like they're going to be heard and something's actually going to be able to be done is the only first step that we've got to make here, because it seems like we're failing to clear what should be a very low bar and just hearing these people that have been hurt.
Junior, let's take a step back, really, though, because, like, what have we been talking about the last few weeks? We've been talking about the leadership and the maturity of the student athletes on campus. And a lot of the problems have been created through the perception that they are amateurs, right? Like, they are young adults that need guidance and need their own way. What we have seen most recently is that they are adults. They're capable of making and leading, like, making their own decisions and leading each other, and they care for one another. So, like, it's not just when it comes to football and return to play and us seeing and commending Justin Fields. It's like, these are adults. So when it's a woman on campus, we can't look at her the same way we look at Justin Fields and say, oh, he's a young, great guy that, like, wants to... No, these are real adults. When you're 18, you go to college. You're there until 21. You're in the real world. You're by yourself, surrounded by a lot of young people. The perception that we have, I think, it's not even we, because we are one of them. The perception that institutions have is that we're almost like children. And so sometimes when you say something, it's like, you don't know. Now you're seeing, now more than ever, the collective voice, but more importantly, listening to voices matter, especially when it comes to these students. These students are not just kids here on campus just to learn. They're adults that are making real life decisions that will set the foundation for the rest of their lives. So when it comes to these women making these claims, you have to listen and treat that accordingly. They're not young people that need guidance. They're people that are having real life, situations, and they're trying to navigate them, and they're going to where they're told, the institutions, to help them. So I think it all starts with perception. Like, no matter who you are, whether you're a student on campus or, a professor, you have to understand these are, realistically, in this day and age, they're adults. Like, you are responsible for yourself when you're on campus. We know this. There are consequences to your actions. And so I think it all really starts with the perception from the institution. And the institution, we come from the world of sports, has always put us as amateurs. And what we've been seeing the last few weeks is we're not amateurs. We're adults. And keep the same energy when we're making, adult leadership styles and decisions. Like, you're seeing it in football, but now you're hearing these situations. And it all starts with the perception. And that's what really breaks my heart. Because it's like, if you don't look at them that way, you'd be able to handle these situations in a real way and hopefully prevent these situations from happening moving forward. So when someone gets to the pros, you're not looking back and thinking, whoa, this was happening and I have to make this decision. You stopped it when it happened years before.
And taking those voices seriously that are filing these complaints and bringing these instances of whether it's domestic violence, sexual assault, that they're saying happened to them, bringing them to those people in leaderships, valuing and trusting those voices. We talked about black voices all often not being heard when they bring things up or being given the benefit of the doubt. We unfortunately see that far too often with women on college campuses. There's something to be said about the toxicity that builds up in male locker rooms, too, that's a larger issue that gets addressed in all of this. But like you said, creating a space where these women can be heard when their problems arise feels like, how have we missed on that already? How is that still something that we have to clamor for? Obviously, a lot to unpack there. As we said, we'll talk to Nancy Armour, who is a part of that USA Today report that came out today. But coming up next, we'll continue the conversation about leadership and structure with one of the prominent voices from LSU. Our very own Marcus Spear is going to join us next here on Jhené and Golic Jr.
Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Jhené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And let's head out to the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line now, joined by our ESPN football analyst, Marcus Spears, on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line with new Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. Obviously, want to get to a lot of topics with Marcus. He's going to be part of the new NFL Live crew that starts August 24th, this coming Monday, with Dan Orlovsky, Laura Rutledge, and Mina Kimes. But Marcus, you know, some serious news on the day. The Washington football team released Darius Geis back on August 7th after two hours after being arrested for three separate domestic violence charges. The USA Today article that came out today with two former LSU students alleging they were raped by Darius Geis in 2016, alleging that they shared these allegations with multiple people, including at least two coaches, while they were on campus there. And Marcus, thanks for joining us. We know this is your alma mater. It's certainly very personal, but we talked about the leadership or failure of leadership that we see in a lot of instances surrounding these issues on college campuses. What has to happen going forward for us to stop hearing these tragic stories?
The first thing is, from the standpoint of females, they have to feel safe. They have to feel like when they say something, it'll be taken seriously and fully investigated. And look, I don't know if the allegations are true or not. That's a road that I choose not to go down because I've been burned that way once before. But if the allegations come out to be true as they go through the legal process and it's deemed that way, Darius Geis is going to face jail time. And whoever at LSU had that knowledge of that information and didn't push it forward, didn't investigate it, should be held accountable, whether that's losing a job or no longer being able to be in the role, period, in college athletics. Listen, this is not the first time. This is not new to us to have to discuss these type of things when it comes to college athletics and sports. It's a difficult situation. It's a lot of sifting that has to go on to figure out what are the facts and what is the truth. But everyone involved should be held accountable if these allegations are true. And if they are a lie, the people that allege these things falsely should be held accountable. It's just that simple. Like, we, you know, there's a hard part for us when we're together and we're having to report on these things and talk about them and give an opinion about it. But the bottom line is this: the truth eventually, hopefully the truth comes out. And based on what that truth is and what those findings are, MG Jr., then things should be handled accordingly. And that's really what it boils down to.
Absolutely. And like you said, creating an environment where women feel comfortable. And so hopefully, unfortunately, in the future, if these things do come up, there is a space to share them and have them reported on and dealt with in real time and not have people waiting because of fear of not being heard for years and years the road.
And to that point, MG Jr., I almost feel like it's becoming one of those things that we have to keep repeating. That should be the norm. That shouldn't be something that we have to worry about if a female feels safe enough to report these things. Like, we every time these situations arise, we always have this long, drawn-out discussion about, well, we should make these environments safer. We should make these camps. They should be that way. Damn. Like, every time this comes up, we should not have to say that a woman was scared to report this because she thought the backlash or the ramifications of her saying something should be called out by everybody and she would be ostracized. Look, if you have something that happened to you, if there's an allegation, it should be fully investigated, and the truth should be sought by everybody that's involved to make a decision, and the ramifications of that should take place, and we should move on from these discussions about these women should feel safe. Yes, they should feel safe. They should have the freedom to say when something egregious has happened to them without fear of retribution or anything like that. So I just want to make that a point, man.
Absolutely, Marcus. It's emotional stuff, and obviously it's what we all hope for, what you just said, in the future here. Marcus Spears joining us here on Chiné and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. Marcus, certainly no easy transition from some of these very emotional and sensitive subjects, but we know in addition to your great work covering the NFL, you also do a lot of work covering the SEC. You've covered a lot of college ball, and what we're seeing right now on another part of college campuses has been the response to COVID-19. North Carolina and Notre Dame both announcing that their athletic departments will halt activity for at least the next couple of days in response to their campuses going online only. From what you've seen, Marcus, of the leadership on campuses right now in college relative to the COVID outbreak, how confident are you that we're still going to get ball from the three remaining conferences in the Power Five that are holding steady to play?
To be honest with you, I'm at this point, I'm very confident from the other three conferences. And I think what North Carolina did, even though it raises the question of so many other things outside of the pandemic and COVID about amateurism and student-athletes, i.e. student-athletes being on campus when no other students have to be there because of this pandemic, those questions are being raised. But if you look at the conferences that have determined up until this point to play football, that's exactly what they're thinking. Look, there has been a line drawn, MG Jr., today. These are semi-pro athletes. That is the way – this is a money business, right? Now, we can put it off as they get an education and, you know, I hear a lot of people say where they get free food, free – ain't none of that free. Both of you all know the hours you put in to be an athlete in college. That's a job. It's work. You spend more time – being an athlete than you spend in classroom. That's the bottom line. So we need to stop dancing around that. And I think this pandemic has really offered up what it really is in college athletics. So now you would have people argue the other side with the Big Ten and the Pac-12 shut it down, and they weren't worried about the financial part of it. I would be so interested to see the revenue generation in comparison to what I know about the SEC. These towns, they're a town, they're a city that would fold if you went without college football for a large majority, for a large period of time. There are schools that wouldn't be able to conduct and open up if football was to go away. And we all know what the ramifications would be on other athletic programs. So I think the ACC and the Big 12 and the SEC are going to push ahead. They're going to go through protocols. They're going to try to figure it out. And as a father, I'm probably like, I was on with Jeff Saturday earlier today. His son is actually a football player at the University of North Carolina, and he and his wife allowed their son to play. I would probably stand in the same position Jeff Saturday stood in if my son was saying, Dad, I'm going to go. Where I'm from, it probably would have been safer to be on campus in a more controlled environment, and you had a better chance of not getting COVID. So I understand both sides of the argument. I understand the medical professor who was saying it's not smart to play. I understand the other side of that is saying, look, it looks like everybody's going to get COVID anyway. Let's try to put them in the environment where it's the safest. So those are the both arguments, and I don't know what side I fall on. I know I'm supposed to have an opinion and be defended, but damn it, Chiné and MG Jr., I don't know what side I fall on. If I had an 18-year-old son staring me in the face saying, Dad, I wanted to play football, I'd probably allow him to go play football because I understand that he can get COVID around the neighborhood. I don't know.
Well, Marcus, at least we look forward to Monday, because at the professional level, we are excited for kickoff and more so excited for your debut on NFL Live, so we can't wait for it, Marcus. Thank you so much for joining us.
No doubt, family. I'm so happy for y'all. I've been watching. I've been enjoying. Y'all keep it rolling. And we on a rocket ship, baby. Let's keep flying.
Let's go.
Absolutely. You can catch that rocket ship taking off Monday, like Chiné mentioned, August 24th. Marcus Spears, Dan Orlovsky, Laura Rutledge, Mina Kimes, and so much great NFL action coming everybody's way. But coming up next, let's head back to the NBA. We got two top seeds that took an L in their first game in the first round. So who's more likely to actually lose the series? We'll get to that next. It's Janae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Dame Lillard moving the needle in every way, shape, and form right now. Setting it off for the whole Bay Area last night as the Trailblazers got a win over the Los Angeles Lakers. And with that, and the Bucks lost the day before, we got to ask some tough questions. It's Janae Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr., two-time WNBA All-Star, Janae Agumake. And Janae, last night was sensational, but it gave us a lot of questions we had to answer. We had both one seeds lose their first game of their first round series right now. So I'll ask you point blank, which one concerned you more, what we saw from the Bucks or what we saw from the Lakers in game one?
So what I will say, we have to put, like, the whole motto of the bubble has put some respect on my name, right? What we heard from Damian Lillard in that big shot and how he said it to the camera. We got to put some respect out there for the competition. I know we've already talked so much this past week and the past weeks about the Portland Trailblazers, but realistically, the Orlando Magic, like, they had a respectable game. Nikola Vucevic, he's normally a 2020, you know, type of player that can go off, and he definitely did in the biggest way. But the reality is the talent differential between Orlando and Portland, and I've said it like on SportsCenter, is completely palpable. Portland has young stars and old stars. Shout out to Bubble Mello, right? Future Hall of Famers between Damian Lillard and Carmelo Anthony. And right now, you know, Dame is the hottest player in the league. Now, when you think about the Lakers, I'm more worried just because this is a, you want to say young just because Dame and CJ are younger, but they are seasoned. And CJ is saucy. He can go, and like the hardest players to guard are the streaky players, the shifty players. And when he's in his bag, Dame's like, okay, I'm going to let you cook. And even Damian Lillard, when you think about that second half, he was having sort of a tougher second half. And one thing that I've said about him is that he's rock steady. Like, you see his emotions no matter what situation he's in. He might have had a turnover or something. Like, you're going to still get a Dame that will dance to blow the whistle, right, and hit a tough three and cross half court when the double team's coming and nail it in your face. Unfortunately, like, the players like that don't really exist so much so for the Magic. So the team that I would be concerned about is generally the Lakers, because the talent on the other end is just tremendous for an 8 seed, which we all going into the season didn't think that they were going to be an 8 seed. We thought, like, this was a team that was in the finals in the West. Like, they should not fall this far. But realistically, this is where we are. The Lakers are lacking shooting. LeBron James is literally trying to put the whole team on his back. And still, that's not, like, at times good enough. Anthony Davis is his teammate. And yeah, he can go for 20, but, like, and I believe he will be more efficient. But realistically, this Portland Trailblazers team is a problem. At the 8 seed, that's like the worst kind of 8 seed you want. Like, a guy that is playing fearless, but also a team that is playing free and has nothing to lose. Like, this is free basketball for them. I know the expectations individually is like, we're going to go out there and win every game. But, like, that's playing to their advantage because the pressure is not on their side. So, like I said, Damian Lillard was dancing to blow the whistle. Yusuf Nurkic was literally blowing kisses. Like, this is a team that is very, very at ease and primed for the moment. Like, in the bubble, they've had tough situations. As much as the Lakers are experienced, the tough situations they've gone through, and they're like, all right, like, bet, next game.
And I think tough situation is interesting because LeBron James has referenced it multiple times now, but he was talking last night after the presser about the situation inside the bubble and the effect it's had on them.
Like I continue to say, this is different. This is different in an aspect of just, I mean, we're in a bubble with no fans. But as far as me being locked in on the game plan, that doesn't change, not one bit. Going out and making plays, playing at a high level to try to help our team win, that was the same. Nothing changes from that. That's the same me.
And I'm with you, Chanae. I think both these teams ultimately end up winning their series still. I think certainly Milwaukee's going to be able to out-talent this, but the Lakers shooting 18.5% outside the restricted area last night. The third
please,
worst
please explain
margin,
the restricted area, please.
The restricted area of 6 feet from the basket inside that area right there.
18%.
And that is the third worst in the playoffs over the last 15 years. The bottom five performances shooting outside of the restricted area in playoff history in that time period, the five worst, four of them involve LeBron James-led teams. So another instance of his teammates letting him down. But I will say this. LeBron James is a lot like a boxer. He comes out jabbing in that first game. He's probing and seeing. And then what do we usually see after that? We see the King usually start to take over in these situations, assert himself more offensively late, and that's what they're going to need next. Now,
Mama said knock you out, right?
Mama said knock you out. Coming up next, the Mavs are going to be without their unicorn tonight. We'll see if we can put some respect on Dame's name and knock more out in the NBA bubble next.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.